A press conference is scheduled tomorrow to announce agreements between the Missoula County Attorney and the DOJ over the department's investigation into sexual assault cases. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates-Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. We'll also bring you an update on the state of veterans' health care in Montana.
And what the large snowpack and low rainfall did for water levels around the state. During a press conference tomorrow at the Missoula County Commissioner's Conference Room, agreements will be announced that resolve an ongoing dispute between the Missoula County Attorney's Office and the U.S. Department of Justice regarding the handling of sexual assault cases. Montana Attorney General, Missoula County Attorney, the Missoula County Commissioners, Acting Assistant U.S. Attorney General Jocelyn Samuels, and U.S. Attorney for Montana Michael Cotter will be at the announcement. The press conference will take place tomorrow at 11 a.m. Copies of the agreements will be available at the press conference.
And another news from around the state. Patients seeking care through the Fort Harrison Veterans Affairs Medical Center outside Helena are waiting an average of 48 days for their first appointment with a primary care doctor. That's more than three times longer than the department's goal of 14 days. The VA now says meetings that target the are was unattainable given existing resources and growing demand. Montana fines released today are a part of a national audit ordered after the whistleblower claimed veterans are dying while waiting for health care in Phoenix. The VA audit also says facilities in Fort Harrison and in Billings are on a list of sites requiring further investigation. VA Montana Healthcare System Chief of Staff Trina Brody says there is no evidence to suggest any Montana veteran became seriously ill or even died as a result of an extended wait. Bondi says VA Montana has had a steady growth in the number of patient visits over the past several years.
I think VA Montana is used to being preparing for increasing uniques or increasing new veterans coming into our system. So we do try and keep a handle on that. Sometimes our challenge is trying to hire a provider in a very small town like Havre, for instance. It's very difficult to do that. And actually, VA Montana, we've actually done a very unique and creative way of thinking. We've hired some providers in Billings to cover some of those clinics in the rural areas like Havre. And so I do think we've had to come up with ways to get around some of those little town issues for a provider. But I think we've done a fairly good job.
Bondi says she doesn't think there's a particularly high physician overrate in Montana VA system. Bondi says they're looking at invading various services. For instance, certain simple procedures could perhaps be outsourced to non-VA clinics or hospitals.
We spent $53 million last year on non-VA care. We'll spend that much this year, I'm sure. So we just need to get engaged with our employees on scheduling practices. It's a complex system, trying to help them understand what VA was trying to do with the scheduling measures. And, you know, we need to try and get as much primary care staffing as we can. It's a challenge to keep the vacancies down, but we constantly recruit. We have a VISN recruiter to help us keep good, quality, skilled providers. It's a challenge to keep them here. It's a challenge to get them here in the first place. One of my jobs is to make sure that we hire highly skilled and quality physicians.
U.S. Senators John Tester and John Walsh signed a letter last week along with 19 other senators urging U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder to call the Department of Justice to immediately investigate evidence of criminal wrongdoing at VA medical facilities nationwide. Walsh today called for the president to form an independent commission to review the care of veterans are receiving from the VA. Also beginning this week, Walsh will have staff members available Wednesday afternoons at the Fort Harrison and Billings sites to assist veterans with casework and make sure their concerns are being addressed. Bondi says she and her staff met with congressional liaisons just this morning, but was not aware that Walsh had made that offer. Last week, Tester announced legislation and a listening tour to get input from Montana veterans about their VA experiences.
Attorney General Eric Holder is recommending ways to increase voting access for American Indians and Alaska Natives. The goal of the plan is to require state and local election officials to place at least one polling site in a location chosen by tribal governments in parts of the nation that include tribal lands. Holder says the Justice Department will begin consulting with tribal authorities about the concept. He says after that, his office will seek to work with Congress on a potential proposal. Associate Attorney General Tony West will discuss the announcement later today in Anchorage, Alaska, in a speech to the National Congress of American Indians. Holder says the plan is necessary to address reduced voting access among tribes because of factors including English-only ballots and inaccessible polling places.
Members of the Montana Democratic Party know they face an uphill battle in this fall's general election. U.S. House candidate John Lewis spoke at the party's convention in Butte this weekend. He said he and U.S. Senate candidate John Walsh are not well known, but it's going to take a lot of work to change that. Lee Newspapers of Montana reports Lewis and others who spoke at the party's convention said nonetheless Democrats are going to outwork Republicans and win. Governor Steve Bullock said Democrats need to drive home the message that they support the woman's right to consider an abortion, investment in public education, same-sex marriage, more transparency in political spending, easier access to voting, and the expansion of health care.
Above-average snowpack combined with low precipitation and warm temperatures kept rivers across Montana from flooding last month, says Natural Resources Conservation Service hydrologist Luke Zukowitz.
Really what we saw was kind of the best case scenario. We saw the low elevation stuff come off about mid to late April, and then the first week of May was the big transition where you had our snowpack really start to come off during our first big warm-up of the year, and that kind of moved the low and mid-elevation snow before we really started to see those advanced melt rates, which we got after the middle part of May. So that really moved it pretty effectively for us. It really helped us to manage the sheer volume of snow water that we had in the hills this year, and it really kept our rivers kind of in check.
Stream flows are slowly starting to recede from their peak levels, and Zukowitz says that remaining snowpack for the state is about 35%, mainly at higher elevations, while reservoirs are still at about 100% of capacity. Gina Loss of the National Weather Service says that there's not much rain predicted for the next few weeks.
Right now, we don't see any big precipitation events in the forecast, and it is a little bit of a concern. Again, this is the period of year when we are supposed to get some of these widespread rain events, and we've gone more to a convective type of a regime, which we can get periods of rain and even some heavy rain, but it's very localized. It falls underneath the thunderstorm, and they're pretty small. What we need this time of year is more widespread stratiform events, and we're just not seeing any come in for the next week or so at least.
Loss says if rain doesn't come soon, it could send some areas of the state into a drought, with big impacts on farming and fire control.
The lack of precipitation that we've had in May and early June so far, if that were to continue, it absolutely would have an effect on our fire season. It's going to have an effect on dry land farming. It's going to start allowing drought conditions to start seeping back into the state. Right now, we've got a small area on the National Drought Monitor of abnormally dry conditions in far southwest Montana. If we don't start seeing some precipitation, that's going to change pretty quickly, especially if we get into some very warm temperatures during the course of the summer.
Clean energy advocates say more investment in wind, solar, and energy efficiency measures will not only benefit human health and the environment, but create thousands of new jobs in the process. Analysis commissioned by the Montana Environmental Information Center and the Sierra Club found some 4,000 jobs could be created in the wind, energy efficiency, and solar photovoltaic sectors. The Employment Effects of Clean Energy Investments in Montana report was prepared by Synapsys Energy Economics, a research and consulting firm specializing in energy and economic and environmental topics. Lead author Tyler Cummings says the project come from spending in estimates based on the construction of new wind farms, solar facilities, and new energy efficiency installations. Ongoing operations and maintenance requirements are factored in as well. Total impacts are presented on a pre-average megawatt basis megawatt.
Solar PV creates the highest impact per average megawatt, with 9 jobs for rooftop projects and 5 jobs for utility or large-scale projects. This is mainly because solar PV installation is a very labor-intensive activity. Wind and energy efficiency have similar levels of job impacts, with 1.5 jobs per average megawatt for wind and 1.2 jobs for energy efficiency.
Cummings also points out energy efficiency measures generates the most jobs for every dollar invested at the installation stage, with an 11 job years per million dollars spent. Count on Call Montana issued a following statement in response to the report. Quote, "The Sierra Club's report is just poorly executed propaganda. It does not take into account the massive job losses Montana will experience as a result of President Obama's GHG regulations. If anything, the report just confirms what we've been saying all along. Renewable energy isn't labor-intensive just to replace jobs in mining, transportation, and electricity generated that are related to coal." Unquote. Rachel Shimshek is the director of Renewable Northwest, a renewable energy advocacy group. Shimshek says the nation begins to, in slow but inevitable transition away from fossil fuels, Montana stands to gain big dividends as clean energy exporters.
Oregon and Washington have already expressed a desire to stop importing Montana's coal by wire. And thankfully, Montana has a great energetic resource in the wind to provide customers around the region something that they're really looking for. Montana's wind is unique in that it blows during the times of the year when the region really needs it most, and that's during the winter. That makes it a high-value clean energy resource. And Montana, amazingly, has the potential to be one of the nation's top three wind producers, but currently it ranks 21st.
The report did not delve into the need to construct more transmission lines to deliver that wind power to the states like Oregon and Washington. Shimshek points out smaller regional transmission lines are in the process of being upgraded to do just that. She adds there are many possibilities that could unfold with time.
For instance, in the near or midterm future, the first two facilities at Colstrip are retired. Then that frees up some of that transmission to be able to be used by other renewable resources that Montana has available. And there is a Montana to Washington upgrade as well that we are have urged the Bonneville Power Administration to continue its environmental work on. And then hopefully there'll be a good business case for them to move ahead and build that. And that will also add transmission capacity such that energy from Montana can move to the West Coast states.
The report's authors say the figures regarding projected growth, job growth with the renewable energy sector holds regardless of whether the EPA's newly proposed and controversial carbon standards are implemented quickly or tied up for several years in litigation.
Jefferson County officials say hikers spotted a body near Homestake Pass southeast of Butte in an area where a missing Butte man's vehicle was found in February. Undersheriff Mike Johnson said today that the body was found yesterday afternoon about 3/4 of a mile south of I-90. The body was taken to a state crime lab in Missoula for an autopsy and identification. Searchers and friends of 54-year-old James Ryan had looked in the Homestake Pass area on and off since February after Ryan's work vehicle was found at a trailhead about a half mile north of the interstate. The business manager for the Sheet Metal Works International Association in Helena was reported missing on February 19th, the day he was to meet with its supervisors about $175,000 that was missing. The FBI is investigating.
Blackfeet Community College is adding a registered nursing program to its offerings. The Great Falls Tribune reports 10 students recently completed the licensed practical nursing program that began last fall, and several have signed up for the 15 slots in the new RA program. The community college has offered pre-nursing coursework for its students, but in the past, students would have had to go to universities in other communities or in some two-year schools such as the Flathead Valley Community College in Kalispell or the Salish Kootenai College in Pablo to get a license. BCC President Booney Kipp says the program is being funded through a $2.8 million federal grant that helps students with tuition, books, and other support if needed. The LPN and RN programs are accredited by the Montana Board of Nursing.
And in tonight's forecast, west of the Divide, tonight should be partly cloudy with lows in the mid-30s to lower 40s. Tuesday should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms and highs in the upper 60s to mid-70s. In central Montana, tonight expect increasing clouds with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Lows 40 to 45, with gusts of up to 50 miles per hour in the evening. On Tuesday, it looks to be mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon and highs from 65 to 70. And in southwest Montana tonight should remain partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Lows 40 to 45 with gusts of up to 35 miles per hour in the evening. On Tuesday, look for increasing clouds with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon and highs from 65 to 75. And now for the editorial comments of Bruce Farling.
Only the Army Corps of Engineers would try and solve a problem caused by a dam by building a bigger dam. The Corps and its sister agency, the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, are proposing to replace an existing fish-blocking Rock Crib irrigation dam at intake on the lower Yellowstone River near Glendive with an even taller concrete dam that will completely span the river, impeding all upstream fish movement. They propose solving the fish passage problem created by the larger dam by constructing another monument to questionable engineering, a mile-and-a-half-long bypass channel around the structure. This engineering is supposed to accommodate upstream spawning movement of Montana's rarest fish, the pallid sturgeon, as well as other native fishes. The project will cost an estimated $59 million in federal funds. But there is one teensy problem here. Little evidence exists demonstrating that pallid sturgeon, a fascinating fish that ranges up to 5 feet in length and which is on the edge of extinction, will use a lengthy bypass channel for spawning migration. The 680-mile-long Yellowstone River is often lauded as the longest undammed river in the country. But it's a mistaken notion. Six irrigation dams span the lower river, including at intake. They impede navigation and upstream movement of many fish species. The Corps' proposed intake project is part of a larger, complex picture involving recovery of pallid sturgeon, which are a federally listed endangered species. These ancient fish, which have changed little since the Cretaceous period, formerly roamed the upper Missouri River basin, probably to at least the Marias River and down to the Mississippi. Their historic range includes the warmer, turbid lower Yellowstone River. Because of dams and reservoirs, reproductive success of wild fish hasn't been documented in decades, and so young wild fish are non-existent. Only an estimated 175 adult fish survive in the system above Lake Sakakawea in North Dakota. Most are virtual Methuselahs, with some individuals surpassing 75 years old. They are in grave trouble. Dams throughout the Missouri River Basin, including at Fort Peck, have radically reduced the amount of available free-running river that newly born sturgeon require for survival. In addition, cold sediment-poor releases at Fort Peck have reduced survivability for the species, which is adapted to warmer, turbid river systems. The only new fish in the system result from hatchery stocking. However, allowing the fish to have unimpeded access to 165 miles of available free-flowing river above intake could be immensely helpful. The challenge is how to pass fish at intake while still accommodating farmers who depend on the water diverted there to irrigate 65,000 acres of the Lower Yellowstone Irrigation Project. Besides completely preventing upstream movement of sturgeon, the current dam at intake also partly blocks other uncommon native fish species such as sauger, blue sucker, and paddlefish. Enter the Corps. It is obligated to recover the federally listed pallid sturgeon in the upper Missouri River Basin. The agency is also not supposed to harm other fish. Many biologists believe the Missouri River sturgeon would benefit if the Corps modified Fort Peck Dam to release flows that emulate normal river conditions. But this would require expensive retrofitting, so the Corps has looked elsewhere for a cheaper alternative to help sturgeon. It found intake, and it has convinced the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to let it off the hook for additional sturgeon recovery efforts in the upper Missouri, including at Fort Peck, if the agency invests in fixing the passage issue on the lower Yellowstone. For this trade-off and $60 million, you'd think the agency could at least come up with a solution that both guaranteed water delivery to farmers and free upstream movement of fish. But it hasn't. One alternative could work. Remove the current dam, free the river, and serve the irrigators with a system of pumps in the river. A trust fund could be established to offset some of the costs of power for pumping. But the Corps has rejected this option, perhaps because it doesn't include damming a river. The pallid sturgeon is a remarkable fish and an important part of Montana's natural legacy, every bit as important as cutthroat trout or grizzly bears. Just because they have few public advocates doesn't mean our public agencies shouldn't do right by them. This is Bruce Farling of Montana Trout Unlimited. Contact us at www.montanatu.org.
Bruce Farling is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.